This is Power Hour. A production of IrishSportsDaily.com, your number one source for year-round Fighting Irish recruiting news and more. Visit IrishSportsDaily.com now to sign up for a premium subscription. And now, the host of Power Hour, Mike Frank.
All right, folks, welcome once again to Irish Sports Daily Power Hour. I'm your host, Mike Frank. I'm here with Christian McCollum because this weekend was a big, big recruiting weekend for Notre Dame. Got some big news today with a commitment. We'll talk about that here shortly. And we'll have Jamie Uyama on here shortly as well. We're going to talk to him about a little bit of spring ball, some thoughts on the offense, that kind of stuff. Before we get going, though, I wanted to remind everybody to check us out on iTunes. If you don't download the show there, you can go to iTunes and search for IrishSportsDaily.com, Irish Sports Daily Power Hour. And then once you're on there, there's a spot to rate us. It would greatly help our ratings and our ability to reach more people. If you get on there and rate the show, tell us, you know, tell everybody what you think of the show. The more ratings we can get, the better chance we have to get it kind of publicized. So if you like the show, greatly appreciate you going and stopping in there and rating on iTunes. So just go to iTunes, search for Irish Sports Daily Power Hour, and you'll be able to rate it and also download it if you want to be able to load it to your phone or whatever the case may be. Also, if you have any questions about the show, give us a or stop by the Huddle, our free message board on IrishSportsDaily.com. You can go to the Huddle, ask whatever question you like, and one of the staff member will be over there answering your questions you might have about the show or anything Notre Dame related. We'll be more than happy to answer your questions. Stop by there. We're getting some good conversation over there, so I think you'll enjoy it. All right, Christian, first of all, thanks for coming on. We appreciate it.
Yeah, good to be on, Mike.
Busy day for you yesterday. It wasn't necessarily a big list, but it sounds like things went really well for Notre Dame.
Yeah, you know, like you said, Notre Dame for the last couple of years, they've done this thing where they do a kind of a mini junior day in February and then follow it up with a larger one later in the spring. But this was even a small junior day, even compared to other small junior days. And I was a little skeptical about that initially, but, you know, coming out of the weekend, it's hard to argue that it wasn't effective. I mean, they had such a good chance to spend so much one-on-one time with all these guys and having all six 2018 commits make it. That really gave all the uncommitted guys a chance to really get an idea of what kind of, you know, program they'd be joining. They had five uncommitted guys in, four came with offers, the fifth left with an offer. As you mentioned, they already landed one of them in Michigan DB Kalen Gervin, who announced his commitment this morning. And then they left the weekend in really, really good shape with the other four. So, yeah, really, you know, you could say it was a tiny junior day, but I think Notre Dame, they accomplished everything they could have wanted to accomplish with this event.
Well, I think it's important. Obviously, corner's a big, big need for Notre Dame since they didn't take any last year, and Kalen Gervin is certainly a big-time player. We'll talk about him and where he kind of ranks and how important this commitment is for Notre Dame to get going on you know, DB recruiting. Again, they're going to need to take at least three in this class, so to get somebody of his quality right out the gate, I think is fantastic. You mentioned the small size, and to be honest, I'm going to be honest. I'm a little disappointed. I realize you want to focus on these guys and you want to give them the best. But look, I mean, come on. There's tons of kids around the area even that you could bring in. And I'm not saying you need 25. You certainly don't need 25 in. But I think if you, you know, got 10 in, that's one for each staff member, you know. You can follow them around. So I would have liked to seen a bigger number with that. I understand that, you know, I think one of the biggest issues, though, you know, without being too critical, was the fact that they scheduled it on the first opportunity kids had to take the ACT. And so a lot of guys probably jumped on that and, you know, used that as an opportunity to get qualified first. But overall, I'm pleased with the way things went. I just wish they would have got a few more guys in. You know, another five uncommitted guys that they really liked and targeted, I think would have been an ideal situation. But again, when you're coming off 4-8, you got a bunch of new coaches and all that type of stuff. Maybe some of that is to be expected, and maybe I shouldn't be so critical. But again, you know, I just feel like if they could have brought in another five to go with the five they had, that would have been a really nice number to have for this first junior day. And usually what they try and do is they try and get, you know, 10 or 12, 15 on that first group. And but, you know, let's be honest, the five that they brought were guys they wanted, and they think they did a pretty good job. Now, on to Girvin. I mean, how big of a commitment is this? Who are some of the other schools that were interested in Kalen Girvin?
Oh, I mean, this is a big one. I mean, obviously, you're talking about a kid who had, you know, 30-plus offers. You're talking Michigan State, in terms of the local schools, Penn State, you know, a little Midwest, and then, you know, even some national schools like LSU, Florida, Oklahoma, Nebraska, Oregon, you know, all the way out, you know, down to Tennessee. So this kid had a lot of offers. Most people have him ranked as a 4-star. I know Jamie has him ranked as a 4-star as well. And as you mentioned, you know, at cornerback is just a crucial pickup after not being able to sign someone last year.
You know, it's interesting because they offered him right before he came up, and they brought him in, and I think it's just awesome that they were able to get him so quickly. It sounded like when we talked to him before, you know, this was an offer he was waiting for, but I guess he put his money where his mouth is by following up with a commitment shortly thereafter. So you got to be excited about that. You know, here's a kid who was wanting this offer, and as soon as he got a chance, he jumped on it. And to be honest, I like those kind of opportunities because usually those are the kinds of kids who stick. You know, they stick because they're just excited about Notre Dame and the opportunity to play for Notre Dame.
Yeah, I remember the Caztec coaches brought a bunch of guys up. I think it might have been even 2 years ago. Or maybe a year and a half ago. And I remember, you know, that group included guys like Donovan Peoples-Jones and Jalen Kelly Powell and, you know, guys like that. And their coach told me that Girvin was really the one who really, really, really opened his eyes more than anybody. And I know he was thinking he could get an offer, you know, about a year ago. He thought it was coming close. He thought after last signing day, it could be coming his way. And he had the weight, but he never got discouraged by it. And as soon as he got offered, it was clear that he wasn't joking around. You know, he immediately set up that visit, went there this weekend, you know, felt like all his questions were answered and it was the place for him. Really got along well with the other 2018 commits that were on campus. And then this morning he went ahead and, you know, announced his decision.
All right. One of the bigger names visiting this weekend was Dallas Gant. And, you know, this is a big time player. This is a guy that has. You know, he's a national recruit. He's got everybody in the Midwest offering him and schools all across the country as well. How do you think that one went? You know, a lot of people felt Ohio State was a team to beat going into this, but it sounds like Notre Dame did a really good job with him as well.
Yeah, they did. I'm not sure Ohio State isn't the team to beat anymore, but Notre Dame, they definitely closed that gap a little bit. I think, you know, one of the things that Notre Dame has going with itself is, you know, it's not really stale right now, especially in terms of defensive players, because a guy like Gant, who may feel like he had a pretty good understanding of Notre Dame earlier in the process, now is like, oh, well, I got to check out the new defensive coordinator. Oh, I got to see what the new linebackers coach is about. He had talked to Coach Elko and Coach Lee on the phone multiple times beforehand. But he really got a chance to meet with them and sit down with them in person. And he was impressed with their resumes and what they had their plans was for him. They talked about him playing the buck position, which would allow him to get trained at inside and outside linebacker. He was impressed with that. He had a chance to meet with Brian Kelly again. That also was positive. So, you know, like I said, I think, you know, Notre Dame definitely made up some ground here. I'm not sure exactly how much yet. It's going to be tough to beat a school like Ohio State for him. Michigan State, Penn State are also on him. But I think Notre Dame is back in his head seriously right now.
All right. Yeah, he'd certainly be a great prospect to add. I know they're not going to take a lot of linebackers, but this kid can flat run, and he's a heck of an athlete. So he'd be a fantastic guy to land in this class if they could get. Another name that Irish fans are familiar with is Micah Jones, a wide receiver from Illinois, who visited for Invasion last year. We got to watch him, big, tall, drink of water, you know, guy who's got real good size, kind of a maybe not Miles Boykin girth, but certainly Miles Boykin height. And you know, a lot of people felt like, hey, here's a guy who's pretty close to committing. How did that end up going? And do you expect him to announce anytime soon?
I thought Notre Dame was the leader ever since, you know, I think it was about 4 days after Invasion when they offered him. I thought Notre Dame's been the leader since then. This weekend definitely didn't do anything to change that. If anything, it strengthened it. He's talked about wanting to make a decision in March or April. When I talked to him yesterday, he said that's still the plan. Said he wants to take visits to Michigan State and Ole Miss before making a decision. But there were other people around him this weekend who really thought his decision, his mind is made up. I know there were some people who thought he might even cancel those visits and then end up making a decision here shortly. I'm not ruling that out yet. You know, I'm just saying what he told me. He told me he's going to wait. But Notre Dame, they just checked so many boxes for him. He's looking for a school with academics, a school that has a, you know, prestigious program, you know, school in the Midwest. The last piece of that was feeling comfortable around the people within the program and arriving on Friday and staying until Sunday, getting a chance to spend time around those 2018 commits like we talked to, along with the coaching staff. You know, he told me he absolutely feels like that's a place he would fit in. So in terms of, you know, as far as Notre Dame goes, I don't think there's anything left to show him. Whether or not he decides that, you know, he agrees with that and doesn't need to see anything else, we'll just have to wait.
Braden Lindsey's another wide receiver that came and visited this weekend. Kid from Oregon, big-time speed guy. Really liked his film. I mean, this was a very, very explosive player. And let's be honest, this is one thing I think Notre Dame needs more than anything, in my personal opinion. They got to get some speed at wide receiver. We saw what Will Fuller could do with the offense, and I like this kid. He's a little wiry like Fuller was coming in. But certainly a big-time prospect with a lot of speed. How'd that visit go? What did he and his family think?
Yeah, it went well. I mean, you mentioned Will Fuller. I mean, that's exactly what Notre Dame told him. They told him they see him being a Will Fuller-type player for them. You know, Marquis Stepp, you know, was in his ear beforehand. You know, Lindsey was asking him, you know, what's so special about the campus. And Stepp just basically told him, you'll see when you get here. And after Lindsey got there, he said he totally understood what he was talking about. The other thing that really impressed him was the professionalism of the visit. He said everywhere he went, everyone on campus knew who he was. That's not always the case at other visits. He also said Brian Kelly came right out and told him, you know, you're a top target for us. Other coaches have kind of danced around that fact with him, whether it's because of his size or what. But Brian Kelly came right out and told him, hey, you're one of our top guys. So the kid, he came with his dad. He said Notre Dame definitely moved up his board. He's got some Midwest ties. His parents both went to Purdue. So it's not that location won't be a factor. But I think coming back to the Midwest offers a little bit of comfort there for the family. He already made an unofficial visit to Michigan State. That being said, you know, he lives out in Oregon, like you said. Oregon's going to be a factor. Stanford will likely be a factor. Another thing that's, you know, interesting is his dad is a big Nike guy, real big, works at Nike, handles a lot of the top accounts. You're talking guys like Kobe Bryant, stuff like that. So sometimes, you know, that stuff comes into play a lot more with AAU basketball. But, you know, if you think about a guy who works at Nike, it might be hard to get him away from a school like Oregon. So we'll have to see if that ends up playing a factor or not.
Yeah, that's kind of the one, I think, negative that Notre Dame's going to have a hard time overcoming is that situation. And you know, if your boss is Phil Knight and he's leaning on you, you're going to have a little bit of problem there. So, I mean, I think Phil Knight probably pretty, you know, reasonable guy and understand that a kid's got to do what he's got to do. But I'm sure that's a situation that, you know, is something that they'll be concerned about moving forward. Now, not having Dell Alexander there, I thought, you know, that you got two receivers in. Was that a problem? I mean, did either of those guys, you know, did they seem disappointed he wasn't around? You know, he had obviously a family situation. So was that, I mean, any issue there?
We didn't get the sense. As far as Micah Jones goes, he's got a relationship that goes back with Dell Alexander years. He actually took a visit to Arizona State when he was a freshman. And had a chance to spend a lot of time with Alexander back then. He knows him well, not, you know, super, super well, but he had an extended conversation with Alexander on signing day. Coach Alexander explained why he was such an important prospect for him. So that's not a problem at all for Jones. He said he'll just come back down for a spring practice to get a chance to talk to him again. For Lindsey, obviously, he might not be able to make it back out as easily. But he got to spend plenty of time with Coach Kelly and offensive coordinator Chip Long. So I don't think that's going to be a huge deal. Obviously, he's going to want to know his position coach a little bit, and I think that will come with time. But I don't think him not being there this weekend is going to cause him any sort of pause or anything like that.
So with Braden Lindsey, you don't expect him to announce anytime soon, correct?
No. We're not expecting him to announce at this point.
All right. Notre Dame did offer an offensive lineman in Cole Mabry, and it was interesting because I was kind of going through a lot of the film of Notre Dame's offers here the last couple days. And I said, boy, they don't have a whole lot of offensive linemen offers. But apparently, Mayberry came up and they liked him. You know, they thought, hey, here's a guy that's worth offering. So talk about that. I mean, you know, it seems like Stan must have really liked him.
Yeah, and the kid was pretty fired up. I mean, this is a guy that obviously Chip Long has a lot to do with this. Maybe not necessarily with the decision to offer him, but he's a guy that Long was recruiting heavily at Memphis. So Long is pretty sure that he's the guy that brought his name to the board. Like you said, Stan wouldn't have offered if he didn't like him himself. Him coming on campus, he was the only guy that came without an offer, and he was really excited to land one. He was really impressed with Stan. Stan gave him a lot of tips and a lot of things to work on. Told him what he did, what he didn't do, and the kid learned a lot just from that meeting. Then he had a chance to kind of meet with every single offensive lineman. He thinks he met with every offensive lineman, and every single one of them had so much, said so many high things about Stan and had so much respect for him that really stuck with him. And the kid didn't know a ton about Notre Dame. He thought it would be a bigger school. He liked the fact that it was a smaller school. He knew they were pretty strong in academics, but had no idea how highly ranked the business program was. So his eyes were definitely opened. He's a kid. He doesn't have a timeline. He doesn't have any leaders, but he said if he did have a list, Notre Dame would definitely be up there. And he's looking at coming back for spring practice to see Coach Stan in action.
All right. That sounds good. Chris, I guess kind of the unthought of thing is there, a lot of these guys who are committed, there are six guys in this class who were committed before, they came up because, hey, they really don't know a lot of these coaches. They don't know the defensive line, the defensive coordinator. They don't know the linebackers coach. There's a lot of new faces here. So I thought it was important to get, all six of those guys on campus so they could get some time with them. Phil Dracovic spending time with Tommy Rees and all these different coaches. And it sounds like that went really well as well.
Yeah. And I think, we were going back to how small of a weekend it was. I think that might have been gone into Notre Dame's thinking of, let's get some of the guys we can get around, some of the top targets around the Midwest in, but let's really try to lock down the commits we got too. So I think that, having every single one of them on campus at the same time, obviously there's six of them, which is a lot relatively at this time of the year, but getting every one of them on campus was huge. And they really enjoyed themselves. And this is a good group. Last year's group was a good group in terms of, the bonds they have with each other and the character within the group. And this group is similar. You got a guy like Step leading the charge from kind of like a social standpoint in terms of, recruiting other people and being super aggressive about it. He just really loves that, doing that. It's not like a, hey, look at me thing. He really, really enjoys doing it. So having him kind of do it, then you have, you mentioned Phil, he's an elite prospect. He's a five-star quarterback. So he kind of brings star power to it. Then you have the twins. They have pretty good personalities with themselves. And you got Bo Bauer and you got a guy like Ovi, who was really excited. Now he has his buddy Gervin with him. They're close. They've known each other since eighth grade. It offered a lot. I know Ovi was looking forward to getting a chance to meet the new coaches, like he said, learning about his positions. He found out he could potentially play the Rover position, which is exciting to him, but that he's not really that caught up in that. The Adam Molola twins, they did want to get a better idea of where they would play, and the plan that Notre Dame laid out for them is very similar to the plan that they use at St. Peter's Prep right now. So not only are they comfortable with that, they know they can excel in that kind of scheme. So, I think it just overall getting those guys together, it kind of cements that bond that they have. And now they're moving forward. Ovi was tweeting already, listing the members of the class and how exciting it is now that Kalen's on board. So getting those guys together and just getting them around each other so they can hang out with each other, I think that's going to pay dividends in the future.
Chris, 7 in the boat right now. That's a good number to have at this point. I'm excited about that. You know, numbers, everybody keeps, is it going to be 20? Is it gonna, you know, it's a fluid situation. There are so many guys who could get injured and have career-ending injuries and those types of things. So it is a fluid situation. But ultimately, I think Notre Dame would like to get 15 in the boat before August and then, you know, cherry pick at the end. That's ultimately what you want to do. But you want to make sure those 15 are some elite guys and, you know, getting some guys coming in. Moving forward, do you see a lot of elite guys? I know you talk to these guys, you know, quite a bit. Do you see has there been a lot of, I guess, talk amongst these guys saying, "Hey, I want to go check out Notre Dame." Is there a lot on the horizon coming up here?
You know, I don't think in terms of like, you know, visits like set coming up. No, not really. But when you're talking about elite guys that are totally interested in Notre Dame, you know, one name that's always going to pop up is Houston Griffith. He's Howard Griffin's son, the former Broncos running back. He's a Chicago kid. He's down in IMG right now. But he made the trip back up, you know, multiple times. He's looking at coming back up again. So he's a guy that, in terms of top-level guys, he's one that's definitely in the mix. We've talked about Amon-Ra St. Brown before. Obviously, Equanimeous, his little brother. He's a guy that's, you know, Notre Dame's definitely going to have a shot at this point. Moving forward, then you look at a couple guys that were supposed to visit this weekend that had to cancel. Ohio defensive lineman Tyreek Smith and Aeneas Hawkins. Both those guys, you know, wanted to try to make it here. We haven't heard about Hawkins yet, but I know Smith couldn't make it in terms of his schedule. Those guys are elite, you know, guys that, you know, have offers from the biggest, you know, schools in the country. That are on Notre Dame's radar, along with P.J. Mustipher. He's another defensive lineman, Sam Mustipher's little brother. You know, obviously Notre Dame's going to have a real good shot at him given those ties. You look at a DB like Shane Simon, who they just offered a couple weeks ago. Same school as the Adamalolas and Brandon Wimbush. He's definitely interested. Dax Holyfield is a linebacker out of North Carolina that they offered last week. Who, you know, it's going to be hard to get him away from that ACC country. But if they do, he's already been to Notre Dame once and was impressed. Definitely looking to come back out. So they have a shot at him. Then you look at a Georgia cornerback, Derek Allen. A lot of buzz going around about him that, you know, he could be a Notre Dame guy. He's already visited twice. I'm sure he'll be looking to come back. And then one guy I know that our guys really like is Josh Moore out of Texas. You know, he's at IMG now, but – you know, he's an elite athlete. I mean, he'd be a four or five star as a offensive player or a defensive player. And from what we can hear, you know, Notre Dame is right up there with him. He came out of the top 14, but if that list was five, we'd expect Notre Dame to be on it.
Yeah, I really liked him. I thought his film is really outstanding, and he'd be a huge person to add. You know, they've got some guys. One guy I'm curious about, I watched his film and I really liked, was Cameron Babb. I like that kid's film. I think he's a tremendous player. He's got a lot of upside. He's kind of, you know, in St. Louis, so he doesn't get a lot of pub, you know, as far as – but I like that kid. I think he's got a lot of potential. What's the story with him?
He visited for a game last fall and enjoyed himself. And I know that they were looking at potentially coming up this weekend, but they couldn't make it work. But the fact that even as of, you know, midweek last week, they were still trying to make it. Obviously, they didn't make it. But the fact that they were still looking at making it that late tells you that they're serious about Notre Dame. And I'd be really surprised if they didn't get back down again soon.
Yeah, I like him. I think he's a good player. I watch a lot of guys, but you know, I thought obviously Moore was just a tremendous talent. That Joshua Moore is a great, great talent, and somebody I hope they can get in on. But I think you'll see. Obviously, this thing's going to grow. The list is going to grow. More and more names will be offered. It'll be interesting to see. You know, when they do have another junior day, hopefully sometime during spring practice, and kids will get a chance to kind of watch these coaches in action. And that's really, really important because they don't know a lot of these coaches right now. They haven't had a relationship with them. You know, guys who came up for visits during the season, now they got a new coach that's recruiting them. So it's something completely different. And that's why it's so important, folks, for Notre Dame to get these kids on campus. You know, they got to meet the new coaches to know, oh, yeah, I like that guy. I like the way he coaches. I like what he has to say. I like how he wants to use me in the offense or defense. So it's going to be very, very important for Notre Dame to make sure that they get a lot of talent on campus here in March, in April, and in June, certainly, you know, when Irish Invasion comes around. So to have a shot, we're going to have to see what happens. And then, you know, O-line, I'm surprised there aren't more offers out there. My guess is we'll see more offers come out. But usually a lot of these linemen, you know, you'll want three commitments out of linemen before August. So hopefully they'll get those guys and get working on that as well.
Yeah, yeah. It should be, you know, like I said, this weekend I think is definitely going to pay dividends in the future, possibly sooner than later, but, you know, we'll just have to see.
Yeah, I mean, when I looked at the list of the offensive linemen they have offered, there's just not a lot of these guys that I would say Notre Dame leads for right now.
Yeah, you know, they threw a couple new offers out last week with to Ryan Hayes and to John Dirksen. Dirksen looked at visiting this weekend, but I don't think he made it up either. So, you know, they're definitely, you know, they were chasing the top guys going back to last year when we were talking about guys like Jackson Carman and Jamari Sawyer. And, you know, they had a chance to get both those guys on campus and impress them. But, you know, when you go after the elite guys and then you're 4-8, yeah. It's going to be hard to get those guys, and then you're going to be kind of, all right, let's go, let's regroup and look at the next set of guys down the list.
All right, Chris, want to say thanks so much for that. Little update there from the weekend. Thanks for coming on, and we'll talk with you soon.
All right, thanks, Mike.
Take care, man.
Bye.
All right, folks, we're back here with Power Hour. Now we're bringing on Jamie Uyama, the famous Canadian up there in Toronto. What's up, buddy? How are you, man?
I didn't realize I was famous.
Well, you're world famous, chick magnet.
Yeah, I guess so.
People saw the video
after our signing day video show.
Yeah, I heard you got like a million likes on Facebook and Twitter and all that kind of stuff. Now, you got girls haunting you down.
Yeah, I'm a regular Matt Freeman.
Oh, isn't that the truth? All right. Well, Jamie, I wanted to talk a little bit, you know, a little football as well. It's kind of an interesting time for Notre Dame because what you're going to see now is, you know, Notre Dame's going to sit down as a staff and say, okay, what do we have for talent? What are we going to do offensively? What are we going to do defensively? How are we going to use this? And right now is really kind of the game planning time as far as, okay, I think this guy is going to be a talent. I think this is a guy that we're going to use a lot. So we got to figure out some plays to put in that will allow us to use his talent. All right, we need to be better running team. What do we need to do in order to do that? All those types of things and will be involved in the discussion right now in these team meetings. And I wanted to get your thoughts on some of this and kind of what you think needs to change at this point. I mean, what would you do on offense? What do you think needs to happen for them to become a better offense?
Well, I think, you know, some of the stuff they've been saying has been very positive. The stuff they were saying leading up to it, where, you know, Brian Kelly mentioned that Chip Long, one of the reasons that he was attracted to him as an offense coordinator was that he ran a spread scheme, but with two tight ends a lot of the time. And to me, that was very encouraging because you don't play two tight ends when you want to sling it around the field all the time. You're playing two tight ends mostly because of the running game. So I think there's I don't think Brian Kelly's offense was broken. I think there are plenty of good concepts from it that made it a really good offense a couple years ago. But I think it would really benefit from playing two tight ends more. And I think if you saw last year, I thought Notre Dame was a little predictable in terms of personnel. They ran, one back and one tight end, 11 personnel quite a bit. And I just think that, you know, it'll be good for them to mix it up and run more 12 with one back and two tight ends more, something that they did at Memphis. And I think that'll help improve the running game. And, you know, I think that, you know, some of the other things, concepts that we've talked about, you know, with up-tempo and run-pass option plays, and, you know, those are things I definitely like to see integrated. But I think the main thing is that with, you know, with the two tight ends and what they're doing there, I think during this time when they're talking about what needs to improve, they need to develop an identity and establish, like, this is who we're going to be. Because I don't think they knew what they wanted to be last year, and I think that was a big problem. And I think if, you know, they've recruited really well on the offensive line, at tight end, the backs are all, you know, almost every one of them is like a big-time four-star kid. The big thing you want to see them build around those guys that they've recruited so well, and establish that identity and be that kind of team to build around their strengths.
Well, I think if you look at last year, I think a lot of the things they wanted to do just didn't materialize for a number of reasons. I think, first of all, Torrey Hunter just didn't have the kind of year that they were hoping for. You know, I think that they felt like he was going to be a guy, maybe not Will Fuller, but somebody who could get downfield, make some big plays, and be a much, much bigger factor in the passing game. And then, of course, I think, you know, they didn't think that Corey
Robinson
was just going to quit, you know. So they felt like, okay, well, we got our big possession receiver. We got a guy who can stretch the field. We've got C.J. Sanders, an ideal slot, you know, a guy that can do stuff that we haven't had in a while. He didn't quite materialize as to what they were hoping for in the passing game, certainly. And then, you know, obviously EQ stepped up and did some good things, but there just wasn't a lot of help there for Deshaun Kizer. And I think that kind of limited him a little bit. To me, where I want to see the offense change is I want less on the quarterback. I think that the problem that Brian Kelly has is he puts too much pressure on the quarterback to make decisions, and I think that their offense is so predictable that they can get baited into making decisions that quickly change, and that's kind of a problem. So I like the idea of the run-pass option type of thing. That way you're taking less, you know, or putting less pressure on Brandon Wimbush to make the right decision and check into the right play, you know, right at the line of scrimmage, right before the snap, and he has options out there on what to do with the football. And I think that that's going to really open up things and make, you know, give them a chance to be pretty good. I think he has the ability as a runner to be much more effective than Deshaun Kizer did. Kizer's a heavy load once he got going, but he wasn't very good left and right. He's not a very explosive player. And I just think that having the ability to run quarterback draws with his kind of ability to turn left and right and explosiveness will really put a lot of pressure on the defense. And so I'm excited to see what that all brings. But I also think, you know, EQ will be better. I think C.J. Sanders will be better. I think Chase Claypool will be better. We'll see what happens with K.J. Stefferson. Has maturity hit him, and will he realize his potential? Because I think he has more potential than probably all those guys. You know, I just watching him play, he's got excellent speed. He runs excellent routes. If he can get his head on straight, I think he's going to be a really talented guy. And then you've got three great running backs that give him the damn ball. The two tight ends, I think, is interesting, but I only think that it's interesting if they start to get some production, you know, as inline blockers and you know, maybe as lead blockers and maybe an H-back setting, pulling him and giving him a shot to smack some linebackers. I'm excited about that, but I just haven't seen the kind of production that I'd like to see out of those tight ends. And hopefully Chip Long will be able to get that out of them, because Durham Smythe, been in the program 4 years, should be a hell of a lot better blocker. Same thing with Nick Wisher at this point. Both guys been in there for a long time. Shouldn't see so many just absolute, you know, Ole Matador type blocking that we've seen out there. They should be better. Tyler Luatua, you know, coming back. There's a guy with a big, low base. Could have a really good opportunity to be an inline blocker that many people thought he would be. And I think just having new name or new voices, new ideas, and really a sense of, hey, I've now got a shot. You know, I coach doesn't know this about me anymore. You know, all my past problems that I have, it's a brand new slate. And I think that that's going to be something that, that can really help them moving forward.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. I think that's a big part of the equation is that a lot of these guys probably felt kind of stuck in you know, this is what those the previous coaches kind of knew what they are, and now they get a chance. It's kind of like a new life for some of them. And I think you brought up a great point about the tight ends, Mike, is that, yeah, I mean, the reason that they didn't play, I'm sure they would have played two tight ends a lot more if they got better play from the tight ends. And you know, and how much does strength and conditioning have to do with that as well? And that's another, you know, question that is there that, you know, you hope is fixed now with a new S&C staff. So, I mean, there's a lot of questions, but I certainly think too, the adding the wide or the wide receivers, all those guys coming back, you know, there've been, I think a lot of people think that offensive line returning and that is always an important thing, but when you have more receivers coming back and more receiver production going back, like their analytics people have looked at it, and that's typically when offenses come and make the jump the next year. And obviously Notre Dame's got a ton of guys coming back, and you hope all those guys get quite a bit better.
Yeah, well, I think they're going to need to. You mentioned offensive line, and this is going to be interesting because you've got your left side back. You've got Sam Mustipher back. You've got Alex Barrs back. What do you do with that other position? And I don't know. You know, is it going to be Tommy Kramer inside at guard? Will it be Alex Barrs inside at guard and they put another tackle out there? I don't know what the answer to that will be. That's really kind of the one piece. But having this group together, again, I think, gosh, this could be an outstanding situation. Now what I want to see out of this, Jamie, is when you've got Q, right, and you've got McGlinchey on that left side, this should be, you know, Zach and
Chris Watt.
It should be the same thing this year. That's what we should see. We need yards. I don't care how many people you put there. These guys are big, strong men. They've been down there. We ought to be able to mow you over. And I think that that's going to be a big thing. Now, my question to you is, when you're setting up this offense and you know you've got three great running backs, you know, or at least three talented running backs back there, and this offensive line, how do you get this offensive line to be more effective, more physical, and get better running game? Do you do anything scheme-wise? Do you change anything?
Yeah, I think part of it is, you know, kind of what I already talked about is having an identity and saying, this is who we are. We, you know, we are this kind of team. We're a physical team. We run the ball. We're going to hit you in the mouth. You know, we smell weakness. We're going to exploit it until you adjust, which is something that Memphis did a really good job of in the games that I watch in terms of the running game. With Long there, you know, when they saw something, they would run consecutive running plays, you know, 3-4 times in a row, where they're running the same running play because the other team didn't adjust and they were just pounding it and pounding it until the team stopped them. So, I think, you know, that kind of thing is, that's how you get those guys in that mode in having that mentality. And if you have that, and if you identify this is who we're going to be, that changes the attitude of everyone, not just on the team, but obviously on the offensive line. And that has to carry over into practice and say, this is how we practice. And you can't say, you know, hey, I got this guy to pick up so we could run two tight ends and then run a bunch of 7-on-7 more than you work on the running game. You have to make that a point of emphasis. So in that way, I think it should help the line quite a bit to have that focus. And hopefully, you know, it starts from practice and starts in spring ball and it kind of builds from there.
When I look at this, you know, it's going to be interesting because Chip Long, here's a guy that wants to do something offensively. And I think it's a little bit different than what Brian Kelly has done. You know, I think he likes some of the concepts that Chip Long runs, but will he give him that license to run that? And to be honest with you, you know, and everybody knows me, I'm skeptical on a lot of things. I'm a little skeptical on that. And I guess we're going to see, but here's where Chip Long earns his stripes and his trust is through spring football, you know, through sitting in the meetings and just really impressing Brian Kelly with his knowledge and what he can do. And I think, you know, just like we are, proof is in the pudding type of thing. I think that this is the proving ground for Chip Long as far as talking spring ball, as far as how much rope am I going to give you here? You know, and I really think it's going to be important that he perform well this spring for Brian Kelly to have the kind of trust that he needs to have in him as a play caller. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think, I mean, even before the spring, I think it, you know, starts now in terms of, you know, even like obviously the interview is where it completely starts and where he kind of gets an idea of who, you know, Chip Long is. But up until this point, they're talking like scheme and they're talking about different things that they want to do and that Long wants to do. And I think there needs to be, you know, Long needs to be able to show Kelly that he can find kind of common ground with what Kelly really likes and what he's bringing to the table and bring good reasons why this is why they should do this way or whatever way he sees fit. So, yeah, I do think it's going to be huge. And I think how they run things in the spring and how confident Kelly is there, I think that sets it up. And I mean, and even with that, too, it can all go away if the offense isn't running right early. So they need to get on the same page and make sure everything is right early in the season as well, or else, you know, we've seen kind of Kelly kind of pull back the reins and take over again. And I think that's something that needs to happen is the offense needs to be able to start at a certain rate when they get going in September. And if they're doing that, then that builds the confidence that, hey, I can rely on this guy going forward.
All right. Which players do you think need to step up on offense in order for Notre Dame to have the kind of season that they can have? Because let's be honest, you got four returning linemen back. You've got all your receivers coming back, all your running backs coming back, you know, pretty much minus Tarian. But, you know, the guy they got coming in is certainly just as good. You've got a lot of tight ends coming back, plus two talented freshmen coming in. Who's got to step up? Who's got to make the big jump for Notre Dame to have the kind of season that we think they can have?
Well, I think it's pretty obvious, Brandon Wimbush, but I don't think we really need to dig into that too deep. It seems pretty clear that, you know, they need him to be very good. And if he's the starter at quarterback, which he should be, then, you know, he's going to have to be, you know, very good this year. And I think that's definitely something where we don't know much on him. We know he has a ton of talent. But now he has to go and show it. You know, that's the obvious answer. To me, on the offensive line, Alex Bars, I think, needs to become a great player. I think when you look at how Brian Kelly hyped him up in terms of he was giving him hype, saying he was the best offensive line prospect he's seen in 25 years, you know, after his redshirt year. Like, I mean, that's a lot of praise.
Yeah.
Considering that, you know, He just got done coaching Zach Martin before that, and he coached Joe Staley, who was an All-Pro in the NFL. I mean, that's really, really high praise. And I think with Alex Bars, I thought he had a decent first season at right tackle, but not a great one. And I thought he did some nice things in the run game. He struggled sometimes in one-on-one pass pro with some technique issues and a little bit consistency there. And I think he needs to develop and be a bit more consistent in that area, be a more dominant player versus the run or in the running game. And whether it's at guard or at tackle, you know, he needs to be that guy, because if they get three guys at that level that they need to be, because I think Quentin Nelson is going to be at a very high level. You know, Mike McGlinchey, I know he had some struggles last year, but he still – you know, was an elite player in pass protection and did some good things versus a run. And if he gets, you know, incrementally better this year, and they have bars on that level too, I mean, that changes the whole dynamic of the line. And that also makes, you know, the right side quite a bit different with no matter who plays next to him there. So him on the offensive line for me is a big thing. You know, we talked about tight end, and I mean, I don't care who it is, but they need somebody to step up a tight end. And I don't know if it's going to be Smythe, because like you said, he's been there 4 years, or Wisher, or Alize Jones, if he's back and he's eligible and all that, or you know, Brock Wright or someone else, or Lua Tua as a blocker. They need people to step up there. They need people to step up as blockers in line in terms of a point of attack. They need to have somebody there. They need to have just someone who can be a threat in the intermediate passing game. Like, when's the last time that a Notre Dame tight end caught a pass on a third down to move the sticks? I can't think of the last time. It's been a while. Maybe Ben Koyak, right? So it's been quite a while since Notre Dame has had that type of presence at tight end, and they need that. They definitely need that. And, you know, I'll take it back to, you know, all these guys can step up at wide receiver, but I really think it would be huge if EQ St. Brown takes the next step and becomes a great player. I thought he was very good in his first year, did a lot of really, really good things, but I think there's more to give there. He can be better. He can be a dominant player. I think in terms of his skill set, he can be one of the best receivers in the country. You know, can he be a guy who dominates in the 50-50 ball situations? You know, he did well after the catch. You know, can he even be even better in that respect? And I think, you know, hopefully you'll see too with the new strength and conditioning coach as well. I mean, he can be an even more physically impressive player, and I'm excited to see how he develops this year, because I think if he has a big year, he might only be here for another year.
I tell you, one of the key linchpins to me, I think, is Alize Jones, and I do think he'll be eligible. I do think he'll play. But if Alize can show that he's a solid blocker, then he can stay on the field at all time, and that's going to be huge, because we know that he can be a great receiver and a guy who can put a lot of pressure on linebackers. What he also can be is a very devastating blocker. If you want to run some middle screen type stuff, you know, he can line up, say, as an H-back or inline blocker, flex out to more of a slot situation, and become kind of that nice key block that you need there for the middle screen type stuff. He could be such an important factor in this offense if he's ready to step up and be the kind of player that I think he can be. You mentioned EQ. I think he's huge. I really do. But they need somebody else. They need that second receiver. It'll be interesting to see how much C.J. Sanders plays, if he's going to be, you know, anything at the slot. You know, especially if they're going to play a lot of two tight ends, somebody's going to have to sit down. So that second receiver position is going to be critical. And will that be KJ Stefferson? Will it be Chase Claypool, Miles Boykin? I don't know. But somebody definitely needs to step up as that second guy, take a little pressure off EQ. And also, you know, hopefully Alize Jones can step in there and become quite the receiving threat. One guy I really want to see step up is Dexter Williams. I think all that poor kid needs is a chance. And I think the reason I want to see that is because I think that will also really push Josh Adams and Tony Jones Jr. to up their game as well. And to be honest, I think Josh Adams needs to up his game. You know, to be fair to Josh Adams, I think he was hurt a lot last year, and he just wasn't the same after he got hurt at the beginning of the year. Never seemed to quite fully get healed until maybe towards the very end. But he really needs to step up and become a dominant player. He's got the ability to do it, but I think if Dexter Williams starts pushing him and really pushing for playing time, that will definitely help Notre Dame's running game. I think offensive line, one guy that I think really gets, I don't want to say a pass, because I think he's done a pretty good job, is Sam Mustipher. You know, too many blown assignments in pass protection. And you cannot run this offense if you've got all kinds of guys, you know, shooting gaps free up the middle of the field. So I think he needs to do a better job of pass protection. And if he does, you know, they'll be pretty solid at the offensive line. So those are my thoughts on offense. Let's flip to the defense. Well, actually, one thing I wanted to mention, we have heard a lot of stuff about strength and conditioning, you know, Bayless, Ballou, players tweeting out, all this type of stuff. And that's very encouraging for me to hear that. I like hearing that the players are embracing this and that this is a big deal to them, and certainly something they asked for and they wanted to. But I do want to caution people. You know, this could be lip service at this point. We've heard this stuff before. You know, we've heard, oh, this is the best, you know, the change and blah, blah, blah. Just be a little bit skeptical until we actually see it on paper. I don't want anybody to get too crazy. And I'm not saying I'm doubting that this is the case, but, you know, we've heard this stuff before. Right, Jimmy?
Yeah, it is. Sometimes it can be lip service. I think that, you know, every off season, every team is getting stronger. They're putting in all the time in the weight room. Guys are fighting over a tire in the middle of the ring together. You know, they're putting in all that. And I think some of that, I think, is a little bit of BS and a little bit more for show than than actual thing. But in this sense, I do think it is different this time, because I think it was clear that obviously they needed a change. And not just like a change in terms of strategy, but like a culture change in the weight room and how things were getting done and how and maybe how invested guys, because maybe those guys weren't invested before. And I think what happens is typically a strength and conditioning coach only gets changed when a new coach comes in. And when a new coach comes in, it's the S&C coach is, or the whole staff, they're like the sheriffs, right? They're the guys running things and changing things for the new coach, because the new head coach really can't get at those guys until spring ball, right? So it's those guys that have to set the establish a culture, and now this is what's going on too. So it's kind of like them rehiring Brian Kelly again because of this new change in the staff. And so in that sense too, it is kind of like, well, they just brought on Lou, they just brought on Brian Kelly, they just brought on whoever, and it's a different change, and it's a different person they have to be accountable for. And I think that's a very good thing.
Well, I think it's, you know, essentially what Brian Kelly's done is hit the reset button, you know, and that's good. That's certainly good, because it needed to be done. We just got to make sure that he hired the right people that this time. And you know, I have no reason to believe that anything would be bad or negative with either of these hires. I think they'll be very, very good hires. But, again, it's just, you know, you mentioned other teams are working in their strength program too. You know, other teams are getting better physically every day, where Notre Dame's probably, you know, behind. So it's hard to catch up, because other teams have already advanced, you know, to a point past Notre Dame as far as strength and conditioning goes. So it's hard to catch up, and hopefully they can make a lot of gains and can you know, close out games a lot better than they did. Jamie, what do you think is, you know, defensively, what do you think is the one thing that Elko is going to have the biggest task of fixing, you know, when you look at this defense? What do you think is going to be the one thing that's going to be the hardest thing for him to fix?
I think, you know, getting the guys to play fast. You know, he wants the, you know, I think the whole idea behind, and why people were a little bit skeptical of whenever anyone comes in and says they're going to be attacking defense, is they think of, you know, how Brian Van Gorder was, and he wants to be attacking, and you know, only certain guys could play in the defense, because there was so much volume within that, and so much volume that that the players had to learn, and guys couldn't play as fast as they wanted them to. And because of that, the defense kind of wasn't what many thought it would be. I think he needs to be able to get the players to play fast and get the best guys on the field, the best athletes on the field. And, you know, can he get those players to play at that level that maybe have not lived up to their potential yet? To me, that's the biggest key, more so than any kind of scheme thing. is getting those guys to play fast. You know, I think he runs a good scheme, but I think none of that really matters unless the guys buy into the scheme, the guys can pick it up at the proper pace, because if they can't, then, you know, we're going to see, you know, BVG 2.0. So that's no one wants to see that. So that to me is the biggest thing in fixing the defense. And he talked about, you know, when you and Matt interviewed him during the right before signing day, and he was talking about all the different things with the scheme and the defense. But one thing he mentioned was preaching a culture of disrupting the football. And, you know, that means like pressure on the quarterback, you know, getting into the backfield, blowing up plays in the backfield, making the quarterback uncomfortable, making the offensive line uncomfortable. And, you know, that's just something that Notre Dame hasn't done very well in too many situations in the last, you know, I don't know how many years, right? So if that's something they can play fast and they can play disruptive, you know, that to me is that, I mean, that changes the defense. That's a 180 from where the defense was. And if that happens, then to me, that's, I mean, Mike Elko, what a job he would do if that's the case.
Well, I think you're going from one mindset to another. You know, I know that Brian Van Gorder talked about pressure on the quarterback, and let's, you know, but I think there was so much thinking involved there that it made him play slow, you know, and because they had so much to worry about, so much on their plate, the athleticism wasn't allowed to come out. And Notre Dame should have more athleticism. That should be an advantage against a team like Navy or against, you know, a team like Wake Forest or, you know, any of those teams that just don't have the athleticism. I think it was nullified because they had to play so slow and think so much. You know, a guy like Niles Morgan, who certainly has all kinds of athletic ability, just wasn't able to kind of showcase that because of, oh man, you know, constantly thinking, God, am I going to get pulled off the field here for doing something wrong? You know, so to me, I think that's probably the biggest thing as well, is you just got to change your mindset of, hey, let's go be athletes again. Let's go, you know, do the things that allowed you to be recruited by Notre Dame to begin with. And so I'm excited to see that. Now, I think the biggest problem he's going to have is, in order to do that, you got to find somebody who can pressure the quarterback. Who's going to be that guy? Who's a guy that can make him feel uncomfortable? And I'm not sure that they have a lot of guys. I saw some guys that I think potentially could do it. A guy like Julian Okwara, who I thought, man, this guy's got a really good first step. Compete level was very, very good. You know, as a freshman, I really liked what I saw. Same thing with Jameer Jones. I think he can be a guy who puts some pressure on the quarterback, whether it be from an outside backer position or maybe a stand-up defensive end in a third down situation. I don't know exactly who it's going to be. You know, I watched Dalen Hayes, and you know, I was underwhelmed as far as a pass rusher goes. And again, I don't want to, you know, discredit the kid. He was a true freshman, you know, out there playing. Hadn't played football for 2 years. But I just didn't see the kind of explosiveness that I saw or that I was expecting to see when I watched him. So who's it going to be, Jamie? Where are they going to find these guys?
Well, I guess that's the $64,000 question. Like, yeah. I think that I think all those guys have ability. You know, I'm, you know, like you, I'm very excited about Julian Okwara's potential. You know, like you said, great first step. I think he's someone with a ton of talent. And the one thing I love about him too is not just that he has that physical talent, but he's got a great motor too. A guy who really plays hard. And I think that he has a chance to make a big jump this year. A lot is going to depend on how he develops physically. And I think, you know, Jameer Jones as well, too. I think, you know, where he's at physically in terms of how big he is, that's going to determine probably where he's going to play. But I think with those guys, too, drop the position that's kind of a hybrid defensive end, outside linebacker position, that kind of suits those guys in terms of they're both kind of a little bit tweeners a little bit in terms of their size. So that might be a better long-term fit for both of them. And I think one of the things with, you know, I'll get to Hayes in a second, but one of the things with and this is where scheme comes into it, is that Mike Elko, he with a lot of his pressures, he'll find ways to get guys in favorable pass rushing situations. So they won't always be pass rushing on a tackle. A lot of times they'll be on a back because of the way that he designs his pressures. You know, where they'll run a twist up front and force a tackle to step down, and it'll be one-on-one with a back, or a guy will be coming off the edge free. And I think that's going to help quite a bit too, because those are situations, you know, I love this. It's one of my favorite things, you know, a Wade Phillips saying that he always says is backers on backs equals sacks, you know, and because that's a situation where, a defensive end or a linebacker, if they get put one-on-one with a running back, they should win that 99% of the time. So, you know, that's something that Mike Elko's defense does. And I think those guys are athletic enough to beat those running backs in one-on-one situations. You know, I think with Dalen Hayes, I think it is, you know, and I was a bit underwhelmed by his season as well. But I think it's also, you know, it's easy to forget that how little football he's played in the last few years. And while he's gone to all these camps and done these things, like, I mean, he missed a full season of football, played like three as a sophomore, played three games his junior year because of a transfer, missed most of his senior season with a shoulder injury, missed the spring, and then was basically first time he was healthy and able to kind of hit and do all these things was, you know, in the summer, in the fall, right? So I think a big thing with him is when you watched him in drills, you saw these like unbelievable athletic traits that were just, you know, just dynamic. Like you would just not see from just a typical edge rusher kid. There's not too many guys who can kind of contort their body and bend and get that low to the ground and are as twitchy as him. But I think when the game started and you saw him rush in the games, some of that went away. Most of it went away. I think a big thing is that, you know, with all those things going on, you start to lose that, you know, because you don't have experience. And instead of him attacking an edge of an offensive lineman or a back, you see him rush straight up a bit more. You know, maybe he's not getting off on the football the same way that he should be. And it's not that he doesn't have a good step, but he's not anticipating the snap as well. And I think that comes with experience, right? And I think he actually, you know, he hasn't, he weighs about the same that he did like as of a couple years ago when we saw him at the opening. I think he was 249 pounds at the time, and he's probably in you know, much better shape than he was then. And I think he has all those traits. He just needs to play more football, you know, get used to rushing in a game. I know that's just something that when I was like, you know, getting my first taste of college football when I was in the game, it just all of a sudden, it's just so much different than going one-on-one in practice with an offensive lineman when you're in a game or even just in a team setting in practice. It's just so different. The speed is just so much different, and things are happening so much faster, and you start to lose some of the things that, I mean, I can't remember him really putting on a pass rush move on someone. And no matter how, you know, physically talented you are, you have to be able to work your hands. And, you know, that's something we didn't see from him. So I'm hoping with experience we'll see like a big jump from him this year, because he certainly has the talent. But yeah, he was a little bit underwhelming last year. But I think he has the talent to be quite a bit better than he was.
Finally, I think the one position, two positions that people just really aren't really focusing on, and I think are going to be the two most important positions in order for Notre Dame to have success defensively and really as a team, and that's the two interior positions. And that's concerning to me, because when I look at the interior defensive line, I don't see anybody that I can point to that I can say, okay, we can count on that guy to give you 100% every play, and we can count on that guy to plug this hole. We can count on this guy, you know, to do his job. And look, as much as we want to see Elko's defense be aggressive and those types of things, none of that stuff's going to matter if you can't stop the run and you can't plug some holes and become a very stout against the run. Now, they've got a lot of guys who've got big bodies. They've got enough bodies there. They've got enough guys with a lot of experience, or at least, at least 3 years of being, around a college football program. So there shouldn't be a lot of excuses for not having a lot of success up front. I'm just not sure we're going to see it because I'm not sure we have the guys that, have the compete level that you need. There's no Sheldon Day out there. There's no Isaac Rochelle out there right now. And because you don't have that, I'm a little bit concerned. That's not to say these guys won't find it. Out of the guys that are there, I just don't see it out of any of them.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's why people were even excited by the brief glimpse that we saw from Elijah Taylor in the USC game, because there's not too much to get excited about in terms of guys making plays there. Just in last season, if you look at the guys returning, there's Jerry Tillery had his flashes, and Elijah Taylor had the one flash in the game. And then, name me another guy. If you're not including Daniel Cage, there aren't too many guys that have played a lot and made an impact. So I'm definitely concerned, and I remember Brian Kelly mentioning that he felt good about Pete Mokwa and Brandon Tiasem, but we haven't seen anything from those guys to indicate that they're going to be players at this level, that they're going to be guys that they can count on from down to down. And so if Daniel Cage isn't healthy and he isn't ready, and he just say he is healthy to start the year and everything's good with him and the concussions are under control and he feels good and healthy, he's still missed. I think every season he has missed the end of the season because of injury. So they're going to need more than just him there. And I think that's, I'm definitely going to one technique. I don't know what they're going to get out of that position. Three technique is a big concern because we just haven't seen the consistency from Jerry Tillery. Maybe this is the time that it's going to happen for him. But he hasn't shown that he's, maybe he said he's wanted to be a great player, but we haven't seen it. We haven't seen it enough yet other than some brief glimpses, same with Elijah Taylor. I think, he's really only played 1 year of football because he had, at Notre Dame because he, redshirted his first year. So, is he going to take a big jump because they need him to take a big jump? I'm very concerned about that spot. I have no idea what to expect going into spring. And to me, that is, if they don't get good play, if they don't find four guys that can play at those two spots inside, then I think, the defense, no matter what everyone else does, they could be having big trouble this season.
Well, it's interesting because, there's been rumors of Daniel Cage potentially having concussion issues. And if he can't play, that's a huge blow for Notre Dame. But I haven't confirmed that or know that to be a fact. So don't panic yet. But there's been these rumors floating around. What really hurt, I think, is Mike Adu Treadway getting hurt last year. If he could have got 600-700 snaps last year, that would have certainly helped heading into this year, because he's shown at least some want to, at least more consistent want to than some of the others have. So what can we expect from him? Does Jerry Taylor step up? Does Daniel Cage, is he going to be healthy and 100%? And does he want to be a great player? We mentioned Brandon Tiasem. We mentioned Pete Mokwa. I mean, there's... Does Khalid Kareem slide inside? I don't know. I don't know what the answer is here, but they got to come up with some answers because that D line is really the biggest concern. Mike Elston has familiarity with them. He knows what they can do, what they can't do. So I think that's a little bit of a plus, knowing that he knows their strengths and weaknesses. But can he get out of them what he needs to get out of them? And that to me is a big concern. And all this other stuff we talk about probably ain't going to matter much if they can't get that fixed and figured out. So It's going to be a position we're going to watch pretty heavily this spring just to see who steps up, who wants to be a great player. And I hope we see, Jamie, I hope we see some real compete stuff this year. You know, last spring we didn't see hardly any compete stuff where they'd go one-on-one. I guess we did see some half-line drills in spring, but we definitely didn't see any of it really in fall. And we got to see a lot of practice in fall, a lot of full practice in fall. And so I'm kind of interested to see. But, you know, I think the biggest problem Notre Dame's had, especially defensively, is compete level at some of this stuff and just building up some confidence. And so I'm hoping that we'll see a lot more Oklahoma drill, a lot more things that just kind of bring out the compete level of you, a lot more team 11-on-11 type of stuff that allows guys to show that, you know, they want to be great players. So, well, that's it, Jamie. I appreciate your time, and thanks for coming on the show. Folks, we're going to be back next week with Power Hour. I'm not exactly sure what we'll have. I know we're trying to get a recruit on, so we'll try and get that lined up. And then I'm not sure what the second part of the show will be, but I'm sure it will be a good one. We're excited about it. Once again, sign up for irishsportsdaily.com. Go to the front page there and click on the subscribe now, and you can sign up. If you have any questions about the show, hit the huddle, the free board on Irish Sports Daily. And then also go to iTunes and download the show, or we'd greatly appreciate any sort of rating you could do. When you search for iTunes, you can rate the show and just offer your comments on that. That will help us out a great deal. Also wanted to mention, if you want to advertise with the podcast, we're getting people contacting us about that, you can email me at mikefrank18@sbcglobal.com. Once again, mikefrank18@sbcglobal.com, and I'll give you all the details on that. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week on Power Hour.
You've been listening to Power Hour, presented by irishsportsdaily.com, where you can sign up for a premium subscription. Follow the Fighting Irish throughout the year on Twitter as well at ISD Update. And to listen to archive shows, visit iTunes and search for Notre Dame Power Hour.